Welcome to Recovery Rocks, where we talk about all things recovery and music. I'm Tawny.
And I'm Lisa, and we're really glad you're here.
What's up, you guys?
Hi. With
Tawny and Lisa, your two favorite people, with a new favorite, and we have a third today. We have Mac, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about her. She has a very exciting project coming up. Whew. Mac is a comedy writer and actor who used to tell these stories on first dates to attract the wrong kind of people. She has been in and out of recovery for over 10 years and hopes to destigmatize the world of addiction, mental health, and accidentally pooping on long train rides while drunk. Welcome, Mac.
Welcome. I love it.
You ever write a bio and then you hear it out loud and you're like, that needs work? That just happened. But I stand by most of it. Yeah.
Honestly, I think you should add in your bio, if you're listening now, she just said the best sentence. She said, buying an iPad was the biggest mistake I've ever made, and I'm an ex-heroin user. So that, you should work that into your new bio if you can.
It's already there. I just spoke it into existence. It's about to happen right now. That's how quickly the internet changes too. Yeah, it's already up. Go check it out.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so Mac is a friend of mine, a friend of the podcast, and she has a very exciting project called Fucking Sober about Anita Drake. And I'm going to let Mac tell you about it, but it is out now. It is a serialized podcast. So we're so excited about this because in the sober podcast world, this is new. This is brand new. It's like a show. It's a sitcom for your ears, and which sounds really silly to say because that's how radio started. And then now it's like we're going back to that. I'm so excited to have you on and for the listeners to learn about Fucking Sober. So will you tell them what's going on?
Bros, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on this show. Tawny and Lisa, you guys have been in my head for at least many times a week during quarantine. I had lots of episodes to catch up to, so let's be real. You've been my friends. You didn't even know it. You were my friends before you're my friends. That's podcasting, right? But for me, my story, it's always fun to ask someone about themselves when they've been in recovery, because then they just like go right into like their shares. So my story is that I'm a ex-heroin user. That's my drug of choice. I've been clean from that for about 10 years. And then, I probably could say I have like 12 sobriety dates off of every different type of drug. But for me, alcohol was sort of like the last step, and I found a community through AA. And how it relates to this baby I've birthed, this podcast, is that I hopped on to the internet to try to check out, but also get some help. And I was looking for a podcast that I kind of like. Interview podcasts are great, and there are you have these amazing conversations, and these beautiful gems come out of them. In early sobriety, if you didn't get me within 9.5 seconds, I'm out. I'm just, my attention span just wasn't there. So, and then the other version of some sobriety podcasts that I had sort of listened to were a little bit more self-helpy in the world of hey, drink green juice. And you're like, okay, yeah, like I hate you too. So this came out of hatred, this baby. And I'm also a solo artist and actor. So storytelling for actors and for people in recovery is like the pinnacle of everything. Everything I learned how to do came from other people telling me. And it's like, I didn't like make that up. There's like Homer and like the Odyssey and like people that came like way before us that did all that stuff. And for me, in terms of recovery, I needed to listen to other people who had been through the shit. And so, when we tell our story, we tell it from our perspective. So this is my story, one person removed. So Anita Drake is a fictional character based on me. My middle name is Anita. That's like a secret for you. So I would say it's about 70% me, 30% honor some people that maybe aren't with us anymore, or maybe just some good stories that we needed to tell. And it charts 1 through 90, because those are the weirdest days. I reflect on my 90 now, literally through the podcast, but also, you know, in some ways, and it just feels like a blur, but I do just remember it feeling so hot and so lonely and so awkward. And, you know, we were all teenagers once, and then we have to go through that again. It's terrible. So braces and bad hair and pimples and all, that's this podcast. And the fantasy for this journey, you know, is to go through her 1 to 90. Spoiler alert, she makes it. But we get to hear how. And then season two will be somebody else's story, 1 through 90. Someone who doesn't look, act, hang, have sex with, recover, like the version that comes from this body. So that was important to me, that we try to at least truck through season one and take a look at season two, and we'll see where this takes us. But really it's, you know, just like art in so many ways, has been therapeutic for me to reflect, pinnacle to my, you know, in my recovery. I have like lots of obnoxious journals to go back through some of that. And then the coolest part about this has been who it's connected me to. And I'll go a little bit more into that. And that, you know, to segue into that, I'll say, because the podcasting medium requires so many audio experiences, we needed music. So we decided to get a bunch of musicians on board who are also tethered to recovery in some way. And that is actually, that has been recently the coolest part about this. Yeah.
I love it. And, you know, that's how Lisa and I met, is because we both created these sober things and we connected on Instagram. And then I think that's how you found me, right, Matt?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So,
yep.
Like, it's, this world just kind of keeps on giving. And I love your, you're talking about like the awkward teenage years. That's a perfect way to explain early sobriety. That's it.
It is. It's so spot on.
It's so uncomfortable. Again, the idea of like thinking you know how to do stuff and then trying to do it the way that you used to, even just basic conversations, thinking that you, there were so many things for me, and we could talk about early recovery, I'm sure, for far too long, but there's so many things for me, like eating food and listening to music and going to work and dressing myself, learning how to do my hair. Because before I just would just never do it. I don't know, little silly things. We don't necessarily dive into, you know, that's not necessarily the linchpin of this podcast, but it's just a reminder that all that stuff comes up and happens. And I think the best part about it is that, it happens for everyone that way. And that every time I bring it up, someone's like, yeah, dude. Yeah, bro, that was awkward. And you're like, I know. So that's been really unifying for me.
What was the thing that kept you going in those 90 days?
Oh my God. Well, I'm a program baby. So, yeah, you know, for me, and this is also Anita's journey too. For me, it was the space that I could go to. It was the slogans that I could say. I mean, it's wild how when you can't think for yourself and someone, almost like meme culture, like AA is the original meme culture for me. And you're like, yeah, like, okay, I can't have any other full thought. But for some reason, I like am chanting in my head, like, just keep coming. Or like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I think it was just flexing some of that. And having the space to go to, which is, you know, a little awkward in this time, but even having the Zoom space to go to, and knowing that it was always there. And also I have a non-traditional bottom. If your traditional bottom is like being homeless, eating banana peels, but like, it was really clear to me, where the fork in the road was. It was just, you know, it was either keep doing what I was doing and die, like kill myself, or change. So I think I had a moment of clarity, even though I don't know if anybody else would have been like, oh, it's so obvious. It was a moment of clarity for me.
Yeah, I had that sort of like, we in program often call it like struck sober. Like I literally thought in the particular moment, and I know I was having a panic attack, but I thought I was having a heart attack, or I thought I had, you know, just blown too much cocaine and OD'd. And something snapped in that moment that went like, we're done.
Mm. You know, like
if I could not die right now, we're done.
Mm.
Lisa, can you give our listeners some insight if they're not familiar with the 90 and 90? Can you just let the listeners know what that is? And
yeah, sure, sure. So in 12-step recovery, whether it's AA or CA, which Cocaine Anonymous, which has been really helpful for me, or NA, whatever it is, people will frequently say, you know, because as Mac so well described, the first 90 days are like, you know, really really challenging, really disorienting, really overwhelming. The suggestion is to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, like try to go to a meeting every day. And for me, I went to meetings. I didn't make it every day, but at the beginning I did. And I was also doing outpatient rehab 2 nights a week. But I probably did like 5 meetings a week for probably my whole, like my first, you know, 90 days for sure. And probably my first 6 months to a year after that. But the idea of what I think is good about 90 and 90 is also like, you know, Max said, like, just keep coming back, just go to meetings. If I miss a day, I go back. You know, it's not a rule, it's a suggestion. And like people say in program all the time, like, there are no rules, there are suggestions that you can choose to take or not. And I find when I take suggestions, that's when things tend to work better. So that is a suggestion. So it was good to be shooting for 90 days. It was good to be shooting to go to a meeting every day, because inevitably something would happen a couple times a week and I wouldn't get there. And that was okay too. Was that sort of your sense, Matt?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was funny. I was sharing this podcast to someone and in the world of sort of like recovery as a bigger picture thing, and then like making it into the Russian doll of like different types of recovery, and AA being one of them, like, especially when you're just getting sober and you're taking suggestions, when somebody like pulls back out and asks you some questions, like, yo, why 90 meetings in 90 days? You're like, I have no idea, but I've just accepted that from the jump because it seems to make sense in terms of like, you know, 90 days is 3 months. And like, if you do something, you know, if you like change a habit for 3 months, you're like, oh yeah, I probably might be different if I do something every day. And then I did a little bit of research on that too. And you know, it's in, you know, the blueprint of AA and a lot of 12-step programs is, you know, a big book, and it's in the big book. So I don't know who came up with it first. Like Bill Dobbs was like, yeah, you need like a good 3 months and then you like feel different or normal or something. Doesn't have it in there. And then I think even Tawny and I were talking about it, and we were like, maybe it's like rehab culture being like, well, 60 days isn't enough. We'll keep you there for 90. We'll make more money off your family. Or like, maybe you really do need the 90 days or something. I don't know what it is, but I will say that I co-sign on the fact that I needed someone to give me a certain number. I think it's that way with a lot of things. Like when someone's desperate enough for something, you know, when you reach, I don't know, you reach an unhealthy weight that is like hurting you, someone's like, just give me the answers. Just tell me what I need to do. Give me a chunk of time. Like, tell me what I need to eat. Tell me what how I need to respond, or tell me what things I need to do. And tell me the amount of time it's going to take. And I think anyone can say to you, like, you know, it could be 96 days and we could all co-sign about that. And we're like, great, I'll do this. Like, I'll put my head in the sand and I'll just do this for 96 days and I'll come up and I'll be the butterfly that I, you know, always hoped I was. I really will say that I needed those 90 days. I needed that chunk of time, both as a goal and both as a gestation period to sort of start to push one way of life away and come into another way.
It's a great way of putting it. You know, and it's different for people. Like I think about there, I've had sponsees or women who were interested in being sponsored who would say, I just don't know that, you know, like next month is Christmas and I don't know that I want to do that. It's like, okay, then how do you feel about shooting for 30 days? Because the idea is like, if you get, and really, as I say, probably every episode, it's all about today, like everything for me, I've never said I'm not going to drink again. I don't know that. What I do know is I can take a daily choice not to drink, and I need to do the things that support that decision. But I think I know the idea for me too, because I knew that, you know, it's not because I thought I was going to die. I had no plans to get sober, but then I felt so much better after being detoxed for 5 days in the psych hospital that I was like, oh, wait, I don't want to give this up. And I don't want to go back to feeling shitty. And so the idea of if you do it for 90 days, or maybe if you do it for 30 days, or maybe if you do it for 7 days, that you're going to like feeling better, that you're really not going to, you're going to think about, you know, what has been better, had no hangovers, no regrets, no drunk dialing, no like all that stuff. And that you're going to decide you want the next day. And it's really all about sort of that. But like, I think you're right. Like there is this, there's something about those first 3 months that just gets you in the headspace. You know, it becomes a habit.
I love that the cell is like, just look at the day before. You know, for you, you're like, I choose one day at a time, and I almost like choose it the day from, you know, let's say Thursday. I had like a pretty good day. I like didn't get fucked up. I didn't like, you know, drunk dial someone. I didn't wake up with a hangover. Maybe I'll give it again, a go again Friday. It's like real quick, that buy-in. Of course, the pull is often a lot stronger, but I love that idea of like, you know, just give it a shot and then give it another shot and then give it another shot. It's not in one chunk of even 90 days, but
right.
So it's like, it's just, you know, and in the very beginning for me, I mean, we say it in program too, but it was 1 hour at a time. It was 10 minutes at a time. And that's a little bit where this podcast comes in. I thought if I can steal a good 27 minutes of someone's life where I'm like, you can't really drink and listen to this. It just like, isn't in line. Yeah. It'll just feel bad. So you maybe just don't drink during this episode. And then like you can drink when, you know, you're done, but maybe you won't want to. I always needed that option. I always needed that option of somebody to be like, well, like, yeah, you can literally go back anytime you want.
Yeah.
And I'm a relapser. I've relapsed many times. I hope it stays every time I had chunks of time away, it continued to fuel my recovery. So for me, I think there's a lot of stigma with relapsing in the recovery community, but I've had so many, even in the chunks of time that I had away, I learned so much during that time. Had I just been using, man, I definitely wouldn't be here, but you know, any time that I was able to gain clarity was helpful for me to be where I am now. So it's not linear for me.
That's such an important message. I'm so glad you touched on that, because relapse is so stigmatized and there's this negative tie to it when it really is just a thing that happens sometimes. And the fact that you're able to look at it as, I learned a lot. And the fact that you even said that you felt your recovery during those moments is, I think that really speaks to how strong your recovery is. And I think that's what makes Anita such a relatable character, where, you know, so now's a good time to say that I'm a developmental editor on this podcast. I know Anita quite well, and I've you know, fallen in love with this girl, and she's so relatable. It reminds me, you know, while I was editing this podcast, it brought me back to my first, you know, I'm not an AA person, but I still remember my early recovery. It wasn't a 90-day thing, but I remember how awkward it was and how painful it was. And I was thinking like, wow, if there was something like this when I was newly sober, that would have really helped me through those awkward times. And I'm so glad that that fucking sober exists and that it's out there and people can listen to it. And whether they're in their first 90 days or 9 years, you know, it's still one day at a time and 27 minutes at a time per episode if you need it.
Well, I asked Tawny to come on because I had been following her on Instagram for a chunk of time. I had been reading her writing, and then it just sort of like became very clear that I wanted Anita to be very much as candid and personalized as Tawny does her writing. And that was like something that was very obvious to me. So that's a compliment that she feels that way to you. Because it is interesting how Anita is, you know, I'm not going to like split hairs here, like she's me, but she gets further and like a lot of art, anyone who's ever like even tried to write anything, it gets further and further away, and that person becomes cooler and cooler. So it's nice that I get to talk about her and not me.
We love Anita.
We love it. Anita, she needs a drink. That's also where that came from.
But I was going to ask if you wanted to tell people about her last name, why she's called that.
Oh, yeah. Anita Drake is a hilarious take on Anita Drank. That's funny. Thank you for laughing. It always felt serendipitous that my middle name was Anita. I needed a drink when I was happy. I needed a drink when I was sad. I needed a drink when I was bored. I needed a drink when I wanted to watch a movie. I needed a drink when I wanted to like play a board game. Like Anita needed a drink like all the time. She drank. So, and that was another thing for me that was so specific with wanting to write her from the lens of alcohol versus another drug. And I had heard it from a chair in the rooms that like, even though I had always loved other drugs, like give it to me. What, I don't care. Take me on a journey by myself in my room. I always love to supplement it with alcohol. And so for me, and it was a cool, you know, you guys talk about this in your podcast, the coolness of being so cool when we're drinking. And I always latched on to that, always wanted to be cool. And so I specifically catered this story for Anita to be through the lens of alcohol.
So that's interesting, but like for you, it was, for me, like once I took the alcohol out, it was easier to take the cocaine out because I was one of those people in CA, we talk about it as ABC, alcohol becomes cocaine. And you know, they say you look at the bottom of your second drink and it says, call your dealer. And that's the point when you go, fuck it. And you like text the dealer right after your second drink. And, for my sponsor also, like Coke was her primary and alcohol just supplemented it. So it was a different kind of thing. But what was your experience or how does that all fit in with Anita?
Well, Anita, there's a couple of things with this too. I mean, I'll piggyback on that experience just by saying that, you know, I love NA meetings. I love them. I love them. I love them. Those are my people. You walk into an NA meeting, anyone who's never been to a recovery meeting, my favorite is going to, if you go to an AA meeting, my first instinct is like, man, I want to share a drink with everyone. If I go to a CA meeting, I'm like, yo, let's lay them out. Like if I go to an NA meeting, it's this sort of takes on the, kind of like a dog takes on the personality of their owner. Like the meeting takes on the personality of the drugs. It's the best. And like an MA meeting, like everyone's like so chill and that's marijuana. And it's so great. But I had heard, I had been in NA meetings and I really liked them and I love going to them. But in AA is where I heard that thing that during a share where some guy said that he loved other drugs, but he would always supplement them with alcohol. And that's why he chose that path. And for me, it just spoke to me. So I sort of stayed on the AA path again. And then I just like made friends. And then you just like hang out with your friends. I specifically made Anita through the lens of alcohol because there is a little, I mean, we can do this all day, but people don't understand that such thing as like, you know, there's like a functional alcoholic. There's like a functioning drug user. There's a functioning heroin addict. So like they're probably your neighbor. And it comes in all different forms, but it's to work through that is like too much unpacking, I think. And we all, I think the cool thing about the world is that we're becoming more and more tolerant or more and more open to these conversations. But I sort of think alcohol is the first thing to sort of tackle. And in the same way that like, which I didn't even realize now, in the same way that like, if there was somebody who was struggling with other drugs, if sort of the gateway thing was alcohol, then let's take care of that one first. So I did it a little bit for a broader audience, people being more open to hearing that message about alcohol. And it is, I mean, for me, I can't drink normally. I've never been able to drink normally. And it's excessively hasn't been able to. But if this helps someone not drink for a chunk of time to like step back and gain some clarity, like that's totally cool too. So I think that also helped with that culture. Whereas, I don't know. I do actually think it's a very different lens to put it through different types of drugs. And that might be the future of where this might go. But I think alcohol just seemed more accessible.
Kind of universal.
Yeah, it is. That's a better word. Yeah.
It is the least stigmatized.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, it's legal. And it's, you can go to a bar and you can just buy a drink and it's like a rite of passage, you know?
Well, where? It's cultural in so many ways.
It is.
I wanted to ask one question though, while we're on this.
Yes.
You mentioned the idea of functional, there's like a functional person next door and everything. And for years, I told myself, I mean, literally year, probably more than 5 years, that I know I'm an alcoholic, but I'm a functioning alcoholic. And now,
yeah, it's almost cool, right? Like, that's so cool of you. You function, like, and you're an alcoholic.
From heavy drinker to functioning alcohol. But like, the truth is that for me, at least, what I found was like, I was fun. I think you're functioning until the day you're not, right? Until the day I could have gotten behind the wheel and done something wrong. Until the day I would have like massively like slept through a meeting or missed something at work, or, you know, until it comes down. Like for, you know, for what if I had like nodded off in a meeting? All of a sudden I don't look so functional anymore. So it's all like this thing. It's just like functional. I get it, but I've sort of started thinking about it. It's like, it's just an accident waiting to happen.
No, I so co-sign on that. And I think it's so articulate to put it that way. I think, you know, in terms of saying functional alcoholic, I don't think we actually break it down. I think it's just like a cute-ism. Like, oh, right. My uncle, he's like a functional alcoholic, you know? Whereas like, it's not cute when you're like, oh, my uncle, he's just like a functional heroin user. You're like, that someone's like, bro, like, get that guy some help. Whereas like, that's real. Like, there are people who do function that way. So I very much put it through the lens of Anita who, you know, I think to piggyback, like bring it back to the podcast, that it, she realizes that she can't function anymore. And then what does that mean for someone who's young? So for someone, she's in her early-ish 20s. I remember I came to the rooms, I was like 24. I think I went to my first meeting. And everyone was like, you're so young, stay. And I was like, yeah, I am so young. And then 10 years later, no one's saying that shit to me anymore. Like, that's, you know, they're not like, make sure to stay, you're young. And I was like mad that like, you guys, I'm still like kind of young. And they're like, no, you're in your mid 30s. Like, get your shit together. And like, what would it mean? Like, if you're a high powered lawyer, that's like something different. So what does it mean to start to not function? And through the lens of Anita a little bit, like, she doesn't really have her shit together anyway. Is it just like happiness? Like, or what does that even mean? Or is it like some self-acceptance, or is it just like literally putting a pause on self-destructive behavior? So then hopefully it just doesn't get there anymore.
I love that you talk about the age, because there is this like acceptance and joke of like a 22-year-old jokingly referring to them as an alcoholic, which just because they like to party. And it's like I was saying earlier, this rite of passage where it's like, oh yeah, you know, I drank heavily. I'm in my early 20s. It's okay. And it's just like, is it okay? Like, you know, like we don't have to lose everything to realize that alcohol is a problem in our lives. So I'm glad that Anita is young and she's showing listeners that, you know, she's, you know, the first episode is her going through, you know, a very relatable experience of a one night stand. And that was kind of her, you know, rock bottom, which isn't really a rock bottom, because like, how many times was that just a part of our lives?
Yeah. It's wild to me how I have a really good friend who is 10 years my junior. And I just, you know, right. I mean, age is weird. There's so much I learned from her on a daily basis. She's just like wise beyond her years. But I was sharing her story and I said, you know, something like, well, you know how sometimes you just like, you know, get super drunk and you just want to forget the night. And she was like, no. And I was like, no, but like, you know, like, you know, you're like, oops, I just like drank 2 bottles. My bad. She's like, no, I don't know that. And I was like, well, you know how sometimes your like partner, like they just like come home and they're just like super drunk and they just like mess the kitchen up. She's like, nope. And I was just like, I can't. Like, you have zero life experiences. But that's the thing. Like, it's she wasn't saying it in a judgmental way. She just literally was like, oh no, I just don't know what that's like. Because I've never normalized it. I've never been a part of that culture. I've never, and I still find that wild. I almost just want to like show up at 4 a.m. screaming her name, pretending I'm drunk, so she can have the experience of having a drunk best friend that shows up at her door. And that to me is like the idea of Anita wakes up in episode 1, and she texts her girlfriends and she doesn't know where she is. And I had a group text, and the joke was that I would wake up and be like, I don't know where I am. I'm going to send you a picture. And that was it's a joke. It was a joke that me and my friends would do together.
Mm-hmm. Did right? You, like, waking up in an apartment and like looking for a piece of mail to identify where you are.
Well, the first step is, am I, you know, where am I? Have I been here before?
Right.
Do I know this person? Who is yeah. this person? Do I need to wake this person up, or do I need to try to leave? And then have I done something wrong? I think that's like one of the biggest, more relatable things. Did I get in trouble to get here, or was it a good thing that I got here? And then there's other relatable things that just were not normalized. Like, I mean, for me in hookup culture is like a whole other thing. But for me, like there are so many times where I'd get so drunk and just be at someone's house and be like, it's easier for me to have sex with you than it is for me to get a cab and go home because I'm fucking too fucked up.
That is so like, real.
What? And like, I mean, I won't specifically say that's a female experience. I think that's an experience across the board, but I do feel like a lot of specifically women can relate with that. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Fuck it. You know, I'm going to pass that anyway. And what would my life have been like had those kind of things not had been normalized? What would my relationship with a lot of things? And that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg. But it's baffling to me the things that we have let slip by as like chalking it up to someone's age or chalking it up to like, well, you know, that's just like how they are. Versus like, what if we didn't have those experiences? God, the things I would not have done and the place I'd probably just be exactly where I am today. But, you know, like, man.
You wouldn't have this podcast.
Well, then I wouldn't have this free podcast.
It's like that I had a blog post like almost 5 years ago that it was my first viral piece. It was called When Being a Party Girl Stops Being Cute. Mm. And it got shared a bunch of times. Huffington Post emailed me. It was like, hey, can we republish this? And I'm like, yeah, of course you can. And I still get emails about that piece today because it talks about the things that I did as a party girl because of this culture that was normalized that you're talking about, where it's just, these are just things that I did. Like I was taking morning after pills on a regular basis, mm-hmm. like, and how that fucked up my system, how that made my periods out of whack and the side effects. And it's just like this thing that I didn't even think about it. It was just like, oh, well, I had unprotected sex. I should just stock up on morning after pills. And like that was, it was just like this crystal clear logic in my head, and my friends didn't question it, but yeah. It was, and now I look at it and that blows my mind that was just this thing that I did and I didn't even second guess it. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. You're on Recovery Rocks. So before we let you go, we have to talk about music.
Music, yep. Man.
You've got, I know music is important to you as a person and it's a big part of this podcast. So tell us a little bit about that.
So I had always known when I came up with the idea of the podcast that I wanted a community. I made this for a very specific person. I made this for our people, you know, my people, people who are struggling, the people, you know, I made it for people in recovery or with glimpses of wanting to just sort of change their shitty behavior. And those are my people. And I wanted to figure out how to make this more of a community. And soundscaping is a big part of making a narrative podcast. And I could go on like, you know, freesoundbeats.com and get like a sweet beat that somebody made and pay $12 for it. Or I talk to my people who made music during a time where either they were fucked up or a time where they, you know, were not getting fucked up, but probably a little fucked up. And I will say that it, that had always been inside of me, and I didn't quite know how I was going to make that happen. And very recently, I finally pulled the trigger, and I realized that, you know, it's kind of the reason why you collaborate with other artists. I could have never imagined coming up with this music the way that I'm getting to experience it and use it. And the conversations that I'm having with each of these artists and the little baby community that we're making. And there is something, I mean, again, when you can tell when the stuff aligns and you can tell when it doesn't. And not to be a purist, because that's one, not at all my vibe, but it's just different when you have people who made music who get it. And it's different when you have a conversation with people who get it. And so I hope it comes through in some way. And I've just met, at this point, we have 8 musicians, and I have just met 8 of the kindest, most thoughtful rock star musicians who do all different types. And they're all around the country. So we have people in California, and we have people in Virginia, Indianapolis, Texas, New York, with all different styles and all different recovery backgrounds and all different personal backgrounds and different ages. And I don't know, it for me was like the linchpin that like really sealed the deal. And then the last thing about Anita, the character, is that she interacts with these musicians, or she interacts with the music in a way to sort of not quite replace drinking, but that idea of needing to create a buffer between her and the outside world, because it's just too raw out there, man. It's just too raw right now. Fuck it. That's why music is there. Like, it's, get your world away from me. I want to go to my own world. So she has that. And y'all won't know whether or not it's like a popular musician or musician that like recorded something on the iPhone. For her, they're going to be like her pillars. And I thought, so I'm kind of a hip hop head. I like stereotypically like in love with the 90s. I like love scrunchies. I love 90s TV. I don't know, nostalgia, right? But I didn't know what Anita liked yet. And I wasn't quite sure. And Tawny had sort of pushed me a little bit to figure out, you know, a little bit more about her. What is she like? What does she do? What does she like when she's not drinking? And I was like, I don't know, because I don't know myself. Yeah. And then I cried. And then I realized, like, it's not all up to me. Like, you know, you hire actors and they infuse themselves. And also not just the musicians, but the voiceover actors are all tethered to recovery in some way. I really think it makes a difference. They're also just really great people. Really just game, great people. And they talk the talk, they walk the walk. They are proof that like being in recovery or practicing active recovery can make you more productive, more successful, more thoughtful. I need to see that on a daily basis. I believe it. And these 8 people that I met, you know, I have Tawny on my team, and she is a great reminder of that for me. This is, at the end of the day, right? Like we're not quite sure if it makes it in the podcast, but Anita's making this podcast for her. I'm making this podcast for me. It's another leg of me staying sober. Yeah. And I now have a community of musicians that help me do that, and a community of actors that help me do that. And, you know, cause like I can't passively stand by. I mean, I have to be active in my recovery, and I'm an artist, and I'm weird. And I have lots of people who function and are beautiful and brilliant. I have a beautiful, brilliant partner who is not in recovery, you know? And so I can pretend that I don't need that, you know, because he accepts me for who I am. No, 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 girl, no. Surround yourself with the people, right? Like, we hear that. That's also like business 101. At the end of the day, when I like made the call for these actors, you know, I want them to be in recovery, but really I just don't want to work with any assholes. And that's like from one artist to another, just don't, or one business person to another, like, just don't hire assholes. Like that's game changing. It'll make your project feel so good. So it's that I can't give more ups. And then also at the end of the day, I'm listening to all this music to put this podcast together. I have some great music to listen to, you know, like it's all very self-fulfilling, self-fueling for me. It's been the coolest part of the process. If you can't tell.
No, we, as you know, and listeners know, we love music.
Yes.
Very, very much. And we're so excited to that Fucking Sober is out there. Mac, how can people find you? How can they find the podcast? Let people know.
Yeah. So you can find us on Spotify, Spotify Music, or Apple Podcasts. And it's Fucking asterisk CKING Sober. And that'll be the way if you want to type in the search to find that. If you're a little confused, you can go to www.fckingsoberpodcast.com, fuckingsoberpodcast.com, or find us on Instagram by the same name. And there'll be all the links to all the things, all the links to the episodes, to the musicians, to the artists, a link back to Recovery Rocks, so you can like check them out. We have, ideally speaking, if we're doing this right, it should be not too hard to find us. And we would love to hear people's responses to it. Like ideally speaking, if you like it, that's for like a good thing. But if you don't, like, you can let us know. That's cool too. We're here to listen to all of it. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for what you're doing in the recovery community and for sharing your story so candidly. I know it's definitely inspired people that are listening, especially artists and, you know, people that want to get creative. And I think all three of us are living proof that like art is so fundamental to each of our recoveries.
Yes.
In our own ways. And a big part of that is just letting yourself put yourself out there, know that you're probably going to make some mistakes and it's not going to be perfect. And it's not what it's about. It's about self-expression. And I think Fucking Sober is a perfect embodiment of that. So thank you. Thank you to Mac for your time. And
thank you
so much.
Yes. Check out Fucking Sober podcast. And until next time.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. You can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.